Thank you. Next year, my neighbor here at the table said she wanted to speak next year, and so she started with a prayer. There, I've really put you on the spot now, then. I thought the position sounded pretty good, being a head honcho at CNBC, and thought that she should. I don't have that high position, so it's good to be here. Thank you, Tyler. You know what? You come to places to speak, and there are times when your starting atmosphere can be a bit difficult to get you rolling. And I really appreciate, Tyler, your song, that first song, and your comments beforehand. It really meant a lot to me. So my wife and myself started in business back in 1984. And it was pretty detailed how we figured out how we were going to be in the car business. We lived in Cayuga, we commuted to Hamilton and Burlington, and we drove by a little two-bay old gas station that had been empty for quite a while. And that morning when we drove by, there was a for sale sign up on it, and I said to my wife, I think I could probably sell cars there. And so that night we bought it. So, didn't that touch you deeply? It was pretty sensitive. We were just kids. We were 22 years old. We did not really have a clue what we were getting into. So much so, we worked hard. We both come from a Dutch background. One person clocks. The rest of you just rolled your eyes. You can see, even though those bright lights are there, I can still see your eyes. So by the time we started the business, our house was paid for because I dropped out of school and thought real estate was more important than school. So I bought a house when I was 16, and we flipped it and did a few different things. And so we started this business. The owner of the property held a mortgage for me, so I really never had any interest in going to a bank. The day I took possession of it and quit my job and everything like that, I said, "Darn," I said, "I guess I really should get some money to buy cars," because we didn't have that. And so I went to bank managers. Long story. Went to a bunch of bank managers, but I'm just going to talk about the one that was nice to me. And he said, "So what is your business plan?" And I will be honest with you, I had never heard that terminology before. And so I thought, a plan for business. It doesn't sound too complicated. So I said, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy a car, and I'm going to sell the car for a little more than I paid for it, and I will repeat. Makes sense, right? So he was very kind to me. He was a wonderful Christian man. He was very kind to me. He actually just retired from the bank not that long ago. And he said to me at the time, he said, "John," he said, "you've got energy that not many 22-year-olds have." And he said, "I'm going to tell you something that a lot of people will not say to you, because you will be critiqued a lot being in business." He said, "Someday in the near future, the bank will be using your money instead of us lending you money." And I'll tell you, if you can ever give a word of encouragement to a young person, it is so valuable. And that was such an encouraging word. I believe that God gave him that word for me to just encourage me at that time, because you're scared out of your brains. You know what I mean? Like, you're standing there. What I do believe that he should have asked me at the time is, what is your leadership plan? I believe that business plan, you can calculate that. And he taught me how to put a business plan on paper and pretended like he didn't teach me, and then he submitted it to his head office. But I believe that one of the biggest things that we need is leadership training. A plan on how do we lead. I'm similar to Tyler. I wasn't always a great reader, but if I'm going to read, I would like to read a story in a story format. Training. I'm not. I can seem to grasp stories better to teach me something. And so I went to this book, this Bible, and I started studying anybody that had really good leadership skills. And I came across a person, his name's Moses, and he had a job where he had to take care of his father-in-law's sheep farm. And for my practicality's sake, I sometimes adjust the stories to fit my needs. I'm not sure if that's correct. There's probably some ministers in the group. Just give me a little bit of grace, I'm Dutch. And I'm going to adjust this that Moses had 100 sheep. Okay, I have 100 employees, 100 sheep, you get it? Okay. And Moses is out in the field, and he's tending to the sheep. Probably got, a wool conference coming up. He's got to get the sheep all buffed up, and he's got things coming up, some deadlines that are coming up, where he's got to get these sheep fattened up. And sheep generally can be pretty stupid. I'm not putting that analogy over to the other side, but I'm just saying, sheep can be a little bit stupid, and you take your eyes off them, and they want to dart. And they want to dart for the rose bush or something that's going to cause them trouble. And so something happened to Moses that was a little bit weird. The bush is burning, and he has to make a decision. Do I go look at this bush that's burning and not being consumed? Or do I keep an eye on this busy life that I have and deal with keeping these fish in place, these sheep in place, and get them doing the right thing because I got deadlines? Well, my first year, I'm going off the story now for a second, back to my story. My first year of business, we're just in the place, maybe a month or so, and a guy comes up to me and he says, hey, you snagged this place pretty fast. And I said, yep. And he said, I really want to buy this place. And I said, okay. He said, will you sell it to me? And I said, you know what? I'm 22 years old. My friends are still in university. He said, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? I might as well try this. If it totally goes wrong, so what? I'm just a young buck. I better try it now. And he said, well, I'll offer you double what you paid for it. I changed my mind, but I was a lot more interested. I said, no, you know what? I think we're going to just stick it out. And so he took his business card out. He wrote on the back of the business card the money he had offered me, put a date on it, which was a year from that date, and said, anytime in this next year you want to sell this place, I'll give you the same money. Now, bear in mind, we bought the place for about the value of an average house in Cayuga, so that was a fairly significant offer to make to us. So we went along in business, and I didn't have a lot of money, so the vintage of cars that we were carrying at the time was maybe a smidgen older than what we have now. And back in the early 80s, the manufacturers did a terrible job of building a car, and so things broke. So we worked day and night, 6 days a week. My dear pastor at the time watched me out cold every Sunday morning because you're so exhausted, right? And we worked like hounds. And things would go good for a little bit, and then you'd have transmissions break. And if you remember the Pontiac 6000s or the Chevy Celebrities, there was not a good steering system in any of them. My wife could put in a rack and pinion steering faster than I could. We did whatever we had to do, and you worked till you got it done, and then you got a bit of sleep. And that's basically how it was. And so we got nearing that 1 year point where I had that get out of jail free card from that man. And I said, Dart, I said, I don't know. We were starting to eat into the money that the bank had lent us. So we weren't going forward. We were going just a smidgen backwards. And I said, maybe we better take this money now. I mean, we're in pretty good shape. Both of us know how to work, so we can get a job easy enough. And she said, she was kind of supportive of that because we were just beat tired. So a great mentor of mine at the time was my dad. My dad didn't have involvement in the business, but my mom and dad lived in Phoenix, Arizona. And so I called my dad up. I said, Dad, we're going to sell the property to the fellow that that offered us the money. So he says, did you pray about it? She says, Dad, I appreciate that, but I've got a month to go. I've got time frames here. If I don't do this now, he says, no. He says, I stand with you 100%. Just promise me one thing that you will pray about. What my dad asked me to do was to turn aside. My story about Moses had to make a decision, and he had to turn aside from his busyness. And he made a deliberate decision and said, I will now turn aside, and I will see this burning bush. I will see the Spirit of God and hear the Spirit of God. I will turn aside. So I promised my dad on the phone that we would pray about it. My wife was sitting with me in the little office at the time, and we got off the phone, and we prayed about it. Kind of like Tyler said, I don't know what happened, but we had an instant peace that we were supposed to stay there. Moses had to turn aside. We had to turn aside. And that decision had to be an intentional decision. And all I can say to you is, the wisdom of God, as Tyler said, comes to us, but we have to turn aside and hear him. And at the time, we had instant peace regarding what we were supposed to do. We didn't have instant cash, but we had instant peace. And we got into I had to do some horrible jobs in the business just to create activity there. And it was like the Lord gave us direction in different areas. I did oil spraying. And honestly, we did nothing by the health unit standards in those days. I had some concoction I mixed on a Bunsen burner with hot wax and oil. I had these big leather gloves because I couldn't hang on to the pot that I had on, but I had these big leather gloves, and I would wear one of those yellow rain suits with the yellow flapper hat on it and big rubber boots, and I would spray cars one after the other, and I would collect the money. And it was a horrible job, but it got people knowing us. And we got a little bit more familiar in the community. I am so thankful that we only did that for about a year and a half or 2 years, but it was a horrible job. But we had direction. And at the time when we stopped and prayed and intentionally turned aside from our busyness and called out to God, we put up a sign in our business, and a lot of people have read this. If you've ever followed my website at all, a lot of people have read this on our website, but they don't realize how much it is a part of our being. And it says, the sign on the in the front of our showroom says, Christ is the head of this company, the unseen partner in every transaction, the silent listener in every conversation, the final judge of all decisions. In his love, this company is kept, and to his glory, this company is dedicated. That became a pivotal part. Now, we had 2 bays at the time in a little tiny office, and so obviously that sign had to be moved a few times because we've got a little bigger property, a bigger facility now. And I have the exact same one that we had printed at that time in the exact same frame because I wanted to remember that time. We have other ones that we've had printed, but that exact one we have up in our business. The interesting thing about Moses when he turned aside. It says in the scripture, it says, so when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, he called to him from the middle of the bush. When we turn aside, we have a talking God. People say, I don't know what you mean by a talking God. Well, he talks to you. The Bible has his whole character explained in it. And as we turned aside, we began to see the face of God. And the only way I can tell you how to understand and see the face of God, we were busy throughout our life, and I would sometimes get busy at work and forget about time. And we have at 5:30 every night, we have supper at home. That is it. What it is doesn't change. That's when we have supper at 5:30 at night. And I would get talking to somebody, and it would be maybe 6:30. Well, I can't stop. You guys understand. You women don't. But you guys understand. You can't just stop and say, sorry, I have to call my wife and tell her that I'm going to be a half hour late. And then it's never a half hour. It's always an hour, right? So you don't stop. You just go through and then get home as fast as you can. You walk in the door. In my case, maybe these men have different scenarios. And my wife is a wonderful person, so don't think she's here, so I have to say it. You walk through the door, and her face tells you a lot of words. I understand what she's saying, and she hasn't said a word to me. I try to explain. She doesn't say nothing. That says another whole paragraph. I can see the face of God in this book. I can see the face of God. And he speaks such incredible wisdom to us that I never want to miss it. I stayed so close to this book because my flock want to wander. My sheep want to wander. And then not just the people part of it, but the busyness of life. You take a business that has no money and then have to get it to a point where it's capitalized enough to afford $20 million worth of cars. In a used car business, which no bankers seem to like them. And you're racing as fast as you possibly can. And you think you can do it without turning aside. And you can do it without seeing the face of God, because he promises if you just turn aside, he will show you his face and speak to you. I don't know how you can run a business any other way. I honestly don't know how you can run a business any other way. I don't care if you're successful and you're doing it without turning aside. You're not. Because the wisdom of God isn't imparted in part of it. The interesting thing is that when he speaks to you, he doesn't just speak to how to make money, how to do this, how to do that. He speaks to your heart. And I don't understand my heart. Honestly, I do not understand my heart. I just went through this whole summer where I stopped. I got out of everything I was involved with, and I stopped and I said, God, search my heart. Because I don't know if I'm for real or not. I want you to search my heart. I'm a strong Christian. I love the Lord. I'm in the Word every single day. I pray. I search God. And I say, God, I want to know where my heart is. Because something had happened, and I just totally freaked. And I said, God, if I'm freaking for the wrong reason, I want to know my heart. That's the beauty when he speaks to you. He starts searching your heart. I had to deal with a bunch of garbage. And he started to show me my heart. Listen, I'm a used car dealer. Somewhere just under lawyers, I don't know, somewhere.
There's got to be, we're in Oakville, there's got to be some lawyers. You're among us, so.
But the Lord speaks to us. There's times, though, when we turn aside and we don't understand. Well, 17, 18 years ago, we had one of those times. Arda was 39 years old. Now you know her age. She's way older than me, 9 months ago. And she had a stroke. We were in, we were selling 500-600 cars a month, 4 kids. We were just swamped busy, and she had a stroke. And the stroke affected her eyesight. It wasn't her motor skills, it was just her eyesight. Went to the doctor, and the doctor said it's very abnormal for somebody your age to have a stroke like this. It traditionally happens to the actual average of 72-year-old men. And I knew she was half that age practically, and I knew she was a man. And they said, they checked her eyes out and looked at everything, and they said, there's no chance for you to ever see it again. She was legally blind. We're at the top of our game. Financially, we couldn't ask for any more. Our kids were good. Our kids were in nice Christian private school. We lived a good life. We had good staff. Busy life. Not saying it wasn't busy. I would have given everything up to give her eyesight back. I was mad. I didn't flip, and I was mad. I was mad at God. I was mad at life. I was mad at everything. Arda, on the other hand, said, you know what? If this is my lot, I'm okay. She was actually quite calm about it. The doctors had set her up at the Blind Institute. And then we get a phone call from a cousin of mine who was a nurse at the time, and she said, I've done some research, and there is a hospital, a research hospital in the States that is doing research on this specific thing that Arda had. And they're having a great deal of success with it. And so, hey, great. So I made a phone call down there. I was kind of shocked that I got the research doctor on the phone, because they were so shocked to have somebody as young as she was able to diagnose it. And so they said, get down here as soon as you can. We're very interested in looking at you, because we're having some studies, and these studies really would be beneficial for us if we could do that on somebody as young as her. And we've got some drugs that we're using that could be very beneficial. So we went down there, and they had a lot of fancy stuff, and they checked her out, and the doctor came into the room at the end of it and said, sorry, your stroke was extremely severe, and there are no nerve endings that are good, and you will not see again. We went out to our rental car, and we just bawled like I said. Is our hope had been raised up again. He said, screw this turning aside. Pardon the expression. This turning aside doesn't work. God, we've served you. We've stood and given you the glory in everything we've done. And here we are, this young. We have 4 young children still at home. What do we do? At home, our kids were struggling. My son started fighting in school and giving the teachers problems. And so I sat in the hot tub one night with him and I said, bud, what's going on? He says, he started crying. He says, Dad, it's not fair. He said, Mom's one of the best people in the world. He said, why did God do this to me? He said, I'm sorry, I don't have an answer for that. I don't know what we're going through. I don't know why we're going through this stuff. I know we still God. I don't understand you. And I cried right with him. I only found out 3 or 4 months ago, my daughter and me were driving up north. My oldest daughter, who's the one that she did all the cooking in the house, because Arda was in darkness. She did all the cooking in the house. She did everything. She did the laundry. She made the kids' lunches. She had just got her license, so she drove them to school. She did everything. Natalia. And she says, I would check out her class, and I told the principal never to say anything. And she said, I just went into the principal's office, and I just had to put my head down. I couldn't handle the pressure that was on me. And she says, I didn't want to put that pressure on you. You're already dealing with so much. Why? We turned aside. Why? Why did he even give us the hope to go to that doctor and say, why put us through that torture again? We were in the office. Arden comes to work every day. The blinded student set up now today wouldn't ask Siri anything, right? But in those days, we didn't ask Siri. So they had set her computer up that it would speak to her, which, again, today's normal technology, but back then it was a little bit high tech. And she would come into the office, and we had an office where we had a dividing wall, but there was airspace over the wall, and we shared an office together. And it was her way of keeping an eye on me, and no pun intended, but keeping an ear on me, I guess. And so we had an offer. Now, throughout the years, I've had, because of the size of our company, we've had people want to buy our company. They've always wanted to buy out, but wanted me with the package. And I'd always say to them, like, I don't think you can entertain that. I don't think I'd be a really good employee. A little bit too off the wire. I mean, you wouldn't want me. And so I said, this isn't going to pan out. And so this was the first time we had an offer without me in the package. They felt that our management team was strong enough and that they didn't have to have me in the package and need me for 6 months or something. It's a short period of time just to make the transition. And so I sat in my office, and again, as I said to you, I was angry. I was angry at life. I was angry at everything. And again, all the money in the world isn't going to change circumstances that are in front of you. And I said to Art, she was sitting at the desk. She'd come in for about an hour a day, because the staff were very, very supportive of us, and she felt that she needed to be there just to show them that she was still there. And so I said to her over the wall, she's on one side of the wall, I'm on the other side of the wall, I said, Arda, I think this offer, you should take this offer. I said, God screwed up on your eyesight. And I know that sounds horrible, but that's how I felt. God screwed up on your eyesight, so he's throwing in a bunch of cash so we can just go and enjoy life up north. The money that was offered to us was enough for a few generations. And I said, we'll just move up north somewhere, we'll enjoy life, and maybe start a little tiny car lot. We'll be outside of the trading territory that they asked. And we'll enjoy life. And what she said to me next made a huge impact on me. She says, John, she said, we're here for the money. Then we would be stupid not to take this deal. But she says, if we've got a greater purpose than the money, then we have to reconsider. She was in total darkness, never given the hope to see again. And she believed God still had a greater purpose for us in that place. She turned aside. She turned aside with her, all the circumstances, all the sheep are running in every different direction in her life. They are scattered. And she turned aside and said, God, what is your purpose? And God answers. God speaks. He shines his face on the situation. We ripped that offer up and we continued on. And I can stand up here for hours and tell you so many cool stories of people that have been changed because of us staying on. Not us necessarily, but staff, just creating a facility where staff have the ability to minister to other staff. God knew what he had to do, but we had to turn aside. It's not about the money. It's about his purpose. We changed our mission statement. And it says, make a difference. Our mission statement is to make a difference in the lives of our employees, make a difference in the lives of our customers, make a difference in our industry, make a difference in our community. And the only way a difference that face showing off of us to others. Back to this leadership story with Moses. Moses had the opportunity to hear God's voice, and this is what God said. So the Lord said, I have seen the people and the oppression they are under, and I have compassion for them. God had compassion for the people. God had compassion for the people that we were influencing within our lives. God has compassion for everyone who's here, regardless of what you're going through. God had compassion for our neighbor's situation. 6 months after, it's funny, I gotta tell you this, so she can see, okay? So just, that's the exact part of the story. But anyways, I forgot, I've spoken this story to a lot of people, and I quite often show drive, and so I forgot to tell the story, the ending part of the story. So I'll stand up here, and I'll tell the part that you're all sitting there and giving, I get choky with it all, and so I reminisce on those times and what we went through, and we walk out of there, and the people are all being super polite to Art. I mean, we walk and making sure she makes it out the door, and she gets in the driver's seat drive away. So I can't screw up on that. I'm sorry, again, I'm not supposed to say that. But anyways, I can't mess up, okay? So about 6 months later, and I now understand why we had to go down to the States. This was, the clinic that we went to in the States is number one in the world for this stroke. People went there from all over the world. They had the best of equipment. You could see the difference on the equipment they had than what we had here in Canada. And they needed to prove there was no chance of her to ever see it. She says she came into work one day, 6 months later. Her mom would drive her around. Her mom had recently been widowed at that time. And so she, her mom would drive her around. And so she came to work and she said, John, I feel like I can see her a little bit. Oh, that's cool. And she was such a woman of faith that if you believe something enough, sometimes you think it. You know what I mean? And I know that sounds cold, and but it's who I was and where I was at that point in time. And so I said, I'll go to the doctor and see what he has to say. And so she booked an appointment. And the doctor knew, was a little bit offended, but he knew that she had gone to the States. And you know, some people take that personally, I guess. I mean, he did. So he asked her how it worked in the States, and she said they came up with the same scenario as you did. There's no hope. But she said, I feel it. I can see a little bit. And so he did a bunch of tests on her and said, very strange. He said, your one eye is the same as it always has been. Or always is legally blind, 2400 vision, actually. And the other eye, 95% of the eye, is 2400. But 5% of the eye, you have totally healthy nerves in the center section of 5% of one of the eyes, which is the same eyesight as she has today. But her eyesight in that 5% is 20/20. The interesting thing, he says, I'm going to get you to do the eye chart. She did the eye chart, and she could qualify for a driver's license. You mean, if you see her on the road? She has limitations, as many of us do when we're driving. I mean, so it's not like she's going to go out in a rainstorm or anything like that. But she learned how to adapt with that, so that gives her the ability to scan read rather than when we I see this whole page. She does not see a whole page. She sees two letters at a time. Has learned how to scan. Has learned how to do things in a different fashion. Obviously, at the beginning that was very tiring, but as time went along, it became a part of her process. But God gave us a healing. And he had compassion on us. But he had compassion on more than us. He had compassion. He said this, as we turn aside and God speaks, he has compassion for the people around you. He has compassion for the people that are in your lives, that you work with. want to tell you one more story, and I've not ever spoken in this type of a setting. I've spoken more in my personal settings about this, and my son is very open for me to share this. It is not the easiest chore in the world to live in a town of 1,500 people and employ 100 people and not be a little bit under a microscope. We have a good portion of the commercial buildings in our town we own. We're fairly significant in the community. And kids don't always handle that as easily. And my son went through a difficult time, and he got hooked on a drug that isn't very good to be hooked on. And we had to put him out of the house. He became abusive. It's one of the hardest days in our lives, to have to put your kid out of the house at a fairly young age. And I love to run. It's my time of worship, my time of prayer. And I would go running, and I don't know whether it was the sweat or my tears that was soaking me more, but I would just be crying because I spent all my time running, just begging God to bring him back. And one day, the Lord said, "Stop praying." And I just totally lost you all. Why would God tell you to stop praying? I don't know if you said telling me to stop praying. That's how I interpreted, but more stop telling me what to do and start listening. So I gave it over to him. And I stopped praying for myself. And I said, "God, I don't know what you're asking from me, but you do the rest of it." And I released it. And over, I would try to stay in contact with my son every week or two, just to so he knew that he was still okay. He was living in very, very not nice conditions. And I had, all of a sudden, I would be woken up in the middle of the night. And middle of the night for me, I'm an early bed person, so it could be your bedtime that I'm feeling. So just so you understand, okay? Although there's a few more gray hairs here, so I'm not. Anyways, I would be woken up, and I just felt this urgency to pray for protection for my son. And every time I called my son, I would say to him, "What were you doing Thursday night at 1 in the morning?" And he would say, Why are you asking? Say, "Well, I really felt that I needed to pray for protection for you." And he would tell me with certain adjectives where to get off. And he didn't like me saying that. But every time it happened maybe 4 or 5 times. Not that often, 4 or 5 times. Every time I asked him. And he would always fluff it off. He called me however long, I don't know, a couple of years, 3 years, whatever, later, one night, 1 o'clock in the morning. I said, "Dad, I got to come back. He said, "I can't live this life. I'm going to die in this life. I can't live this kind of life anymore." He was stoned out of his brain, so I said, and I learned from past experience that that wasn't a good time to talk to him. So I said, "Will you call me back tomorrow if you're in the same state of affairs that you want to come back? I'm more than willing to take you back, but right now is not the time to talk." Next day he called me up, and we got him picked up, and we went through a whole rehab detox process, and he's married with 2 kids and works in business with my daughter now. One of the things he said to me, he said, "This totally freaked me out, Dad." He said, "Every time you told me you were praying for me," he said, "you would ask me a specific time." And he said, "Every single one of those times, I was in serious, serious trouble." He said, "If I was there, and I thought, if God loves me that much, then he's going to wake my dad up when I'm the worst trouble I could be in. I said, that's God's love. He said, I couldn't believe him. He said, that's what brought me back to God. I had to turn aside. I don't care how good you're doing, turn aside to God. Because God's got more people to touch than just you. This is a story of my son. I can tell you stories of employees where they told me where to go. And I went up to the one guy, he's a biker type of guy, and I went and gave him a hug and I said, I love you. You don't do crap like that. He gave his heart to the Lord 6 months later, and he died 6 months after that. On his deathbed, he said to me, John, I'm the happiest man I've ever been in my life. Because we turned aside and hugged him. I don't hug everybody. But in that situation, the only reason I knew I had to hug him was because I turned aside and I heard God speak. I'm not really a good car dealer. I don't like cars. I need to turn aside in the car business because I do not like cars. And that's the truth. Do not come to me to buy a car. Buy from one of my salesmen. My son, he loves cars. I do not like cars. I drove for the longest time an 08 Uplander, which was a casket mover. We got it so cheap, and I said, that's my car. And I drove it for so long, and my kids were so mad at me for driving it, because they said, this is embarrassing, Dad. You're driving this old sweat Uplander with no seats in it, because I put plywood in it. It's like a pickup truck, man. And so they finally just bought me a new pickup truck. I need to turn this up. I want to tell you just the end of the story here. My son, about a month ago, came into my office and he said, I got a call from a buddy of mine from the old days, and he asked me to take him to rehab. And I said, how do you feel? He said, well, he's hit bottom. His wife left. He's not allowed to see his kids. The house got repossessed or taken out. He's had to sell the house. And he said, he's basically at the bottom of his work. He's telling him to go get help. So the only person he could call was me. And my son took him, and he said, I sat in the truck after I dropped him off. He said, I cried with compassion. He turned aside. He heard God's voice. And the face of God shone on him, and the compassion that our Heavenly Father had shone through him to them. Can you imagine everyone in this room shining, turning aside, and shining the life of our Heavenly Father on everybody else that you impact? We're going to make a huge impact in the world. Turn aside.